Talking Tesla.
I'm not sure if like my foot should be on the brake or the accelerator.
Because they put rings on Elon.
It must be some sort of geometrical algorithm.
I don't think you need to touch the steering wheel there, Tom.
Oh, I'm sure there's some math. So SpaceX, here's the deal. Landing a rocket on a drone ship is key.
Charger.
How am I expected to drive a car without autopilot? Safely.
Charger.
No, I'm not a good Parker, Tom.
Yeah.
I'll be the first to admit it. Yeah. I just think that this is a car company that is run by super geeks. All the other cars are going to be stupid cars compared to this car.
You don't even have to remember that. You've got a Model X. I have seen the future, and it is light pole charging.
No, I wouldn't call it a screw-up. Do you like your Model X?
God, it's beautiful. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Talking Tesla 106.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
106? Is it 106? I think
yeah,
it's 106.
106.
I'm starting to lose count.
It's a lucky number.
It's on the page, right? You see that at the top.
Yeah, but I wrote that. So it could be wrong.
Oh, that's it. That's a good point, actually.
Could be wrong.
I thought Cece put these things together. I didn't know it was you. I should really start
checking
your
that's
work.
That's a lie. She did put it together. But she was in Chile drinking wine, so anything could have happened.
Credit taker. Mm. No, she's Australian, though, so like... They drinking wine on other continents. It's like it's sort of in their DNA.
Oh, it's just sort of what you do.
You know, not to insult the Australians, but
you just did.
But yes. You people can drink
because they drink beer.
You do two things very well. You drink,
yes.
And you travel the effing world, man.
That's true.
You guys are everywhere. It's amazing.
Yep, you can go. There is this question now, like, what is the one organism that can be found all over the planet? Like, from North Pole to South Pole, what is that one organism? And it is...
Escherichia coli.
It's Australian. Australian. You'll find them anywhere.
They are. Uh-huh. I've never been anywhere without one.
You just trek into the North Pole, you just got there, and there's some Australian there having a beer going, crikey, mate, it's cold. Jeez. It's true. Seen it happen. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, first of all, I want to tell you about Alex. And Alex is... a physicist, sort of engineer, who has this fantastic explanation of some of the most important things we talk about all the time, about energy and about kilowatt hours. And he does it with lots of allegories to, you know, filling up tanks and just doing, he just makes it reachable. And for our Patreons this week, I've edited it up. It's super slick. And this is a push for being a Patreon. It's so good. Thank you, Alex. I won't say his name because I'll screw it up. But he sounds like Nikola Tesla. I'm just going to tell you that
so
right now.
Two reasons to join Patreon this week.
Crush Tom's car.
Crush my
car.
Tom's car.
And an interview from Alex.
And it's really good. But first, before we get into the big news.
I just wanted
news,
to check with you.
Yes.
You said he sounds like Nikola Tesla.
Yes.
Is that from when you got that autographed picture from Nikola Tesla?
It's how I imagine Nikola Tesla to be. Exotic sort of, you know,
it's
Eastern
not when you
European,
ran into him.
Some, just smart.
I was just checking because
smart.
I would actually stand closer to you here in the studio if I knew you had spoken with Nikola Tesla, because I'm really close to Tom right now.
Hey, Google, what year did Nikola Tesla die?
Nikola Tesla died on January 7th, 1943.
You could have totally met him.
I'm not that old.
Are you? Really? You're not?
I've got the skin age of somebody who's 100 years old, but I'm actually only in my 50s.
You know what? My bad. I mean, my mistake. Yeah. I had no idea.
That's
1943,
fine.
I mean...
Yeah. Well, as we record this, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we are still recovering from a series of hurricanes here in the Northern Hemisphere. In particular, Puerto Rico has been just destroyed. The eye of the storm went right up the island. And even today, it's estimated that over 50% of the people don't have fresh drinking water. There's still no electricity to most of the island and won't be for weeks to months and maybe even longer. And so the first article we have here is from Teslarati, which says that Tesla is sending over power walls and it's sending over solar panels and it's creating sort of these micro grids. And it brought up a whole bunch of questions about how should Puerto Rico redo its failed national grid, which was $9 billion in debt and just basically got blown away. One of the things that people are talking about is making microgrids, and it turns out that solar panels on various structures are actually really resistant to hurricanes. So Tesla has sent over a series of power walls. Elon Musk himself has sent over $250,000. And what do you think, boys? Should Puerto Rico change the way they do their power grid? Because they just had sort of traditional lines above the ground in a place that gets hit by a lot of storms. Is it time for a change? This is this big infrastructure question.
Yeah.
What do we do differently now we know that this is going to be a recurrent event?
Well, there's multiple facets to this, right? Because you have a humanitarian crisis, obviously. So you want to get the power on as quickly as possible. So does that sort of preclude us having the ability to sort of rethink the power grid? My guess is the rethinking and redesigning of an entire island nation's power grid might take a long time, but I would love for Puerto Rico to become sort of a lab of how these democratization of electricity could take place in some ways, like a lot of different ways to do it. Like, let's get the power back on. Let's get the hospitals up and running. Let's clean the roads. Let's try to get as many of the people back to normalcy as we possibly can. But then let's really think about it, because the U.S. is going to be making a big investment, because Puerto Rico is part of the U.S. A lot of people don't know that, but it is actually part of the U.S.
The people who live in Puerto Rico are United States citizens.
Voting rights of United States citizens in Puerto Rico, like the voting rights of residents of other U.S. territories, differ from those of U.S. citizens that live in the 50 states and the District of Columbia. Residents of Puerto Rico and other U.S. territories do not have voting representation in the United States Congress and are not entitled to electoral votes for president. The U.S. Constitution grants congressional voting representation to U.S. states, which Puerto Rico and other U.S. territories are not, specifying that members of Congress shall be elected by direct popular vote and that the president and the vice president shall be chosen by electors of the states. Puerto Rico is a territory under the sovereignty of the federal government, but is not part of any state nor a state itself. It has been organized, given a measure of self-rule, subject to Congress's plenary powers. Puerto Rico is entitled to a resident commissioner, a delegate who is not allowed to vote on the floor of the House, but can vote on procedural matters and in House committees. In most other U.S. overseas territories, as well as the District of Columbia, a similar representative position is styled delegate.
So this week in territories?
I guess that's this week in congressional matters.
I mean, this is one of the reasons why one of the aims for Puerto Rico has been to try and become a state or have more representation in the U.S. government. The same thing goes for Guam, the U.S. Virgin Islands, the Marianas Islands. These are all places where they are U.S. citizens, but they lack the same representation. And there is one more place, very significant, that is just like this. It's called Washington, D.C. The city itself is a federal district, not a state without representation.
So that's a perfect example. Let's say a gigantic hurricane went through D.C. Would we say they're not citizens?
We say Puerto Ricans aren't citizens because we're not smart, not because there was a hurricane. We just don't know our politics.
Well, there's that.
I think that, you know, the story is a great story. I'm really thumbs up to Elon and Tesla Power for doing the right thing. I think that power walls and sun PV panels are a great way to go, especially in a tropical climate where you've got lots of sun. That will be great going forward. Maybe this is a little cart before the horse because they are in the middle of a disaster still. There's still like 14 out of 60 some odd hospitals that have no power. They're not connected to the grid. They're running on diesel generators and there's like lack of diesel fuel. There's dialysis centers that aren't running at full capacity because they don't have power. It's really an amazing mess. What I've looked at on the news and over the internet, it's a mess. It's a super mess. And, you know, like one of the big cruise ship companies went down there with an empty cruise ship just to pick people up and take them out of there. You know, it would take a lot of cruise ships to evacuate Puerto Rico, but it's really, really bad.
It seems to me that it makes sense that rapidly deployable energy at a small scale, even a large scale, is solar panels and power walls. You can get them on a boat and go really fast and just deploy them really fast and stick the batteries up and you get a microgrid and you can run a hospital or you can run small devices for people to charge up their CPAP devices or whatever it is, I can see, get my head around that. I can't get my head around, okay, we have to rebuild an entire electrical system. Yeah. That's going to take forever. But batteries and solar panels can get there fast and start doing something.
Yeah, and if you're talking about individual singular solar panels on people's roofs, you have inverter installs. There's a whole lot of things, obviously, that is involved in that aspect of it.
I think the good analogy is to consider how, you know, 40 years ago, to get telephones to everybody, you had to run wires all over the place and have power to run those phones, and it took a lot of infrastructure. And now countries for decades, or like at least 20 years, are now starting to just bypass the use of wired telephone communications and just putting up cell towers, and people buy cell phones. So this is an analogy of how communication has completely changed. And I think we're looking at a situation where the paradigm is going to shift for power as well. More and more people will move towards photovoltaics, battery backup, and a smaller, more distributed grid system. And there's a great article that I think, Tom, you might have thrown in here about rooftop solar stood up to Sandy, or I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I was curious about whether or not, you know, I never haven't looked into the impacts of solar panels flying around during hurricanes and things like that. Just kind of curious what sort of news was out there on how they stood up. Yeah. And they actually stood up really well in Sandy. They've even had certain panels take up like massive hailstorms and have some damage, but they mostly survived.
And that, Sandy, was the huge hurricane
superstorm
that hit New Jersey.
Correct.
And there were pictures in the article of this one installation on top of, like, I think it was a ferry or some type of municipal building along the waterfront with, it's just covered in solar panels. Like, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of solar panels. And there were just a couple of spots on this roof where you could see solar panels were damaged or moved. And it was like the one site at which they saw the most. And they had a couple of experts talk in this article about how durable solar panels are, that they're actually designed. Industry certification standards for solar panels are to withstand 2,400 pascals of pressure. That's the SI unit for pressure. And one pascal is like a fraction of a PSI. But basically, they're made to withstand winds of up to 130 miles per hour. And some of the other manufacturers, so that's like a standard they have to meet. Other manufacturers design them to withstand winds to close to 160 miles per hour, which are huge winds. And, you know, not that many hurricanes get that bad. So if a hurricane comes through and knocks down power lines, knocks down trees into power lines, you're going to lose your power. But if you have solar panels and you have a battery backup system, you're likely to survive without as much, you know, inconvenience and discomfort and such.
And again, even things that hit solar panels, like a tree lands on your solar panel, sometimes that doesn't even break them. They're pretty badass.
I think the only thing they're not guaranteed against are golf balls.
Hmm.
Stupid golf balls. Who would
hit a golf ball anyway onto someone's roof?
Hey, let's talk about the big announcement. Enough already, because first of all, let me ask you a question.
What?
Where do you think the center of the universe is?
You mean like
which
the
universe?
Very
the very middle of the universe. The universe is very big.
Yeah. You are
all
expanding. The focus is into one spot.
Yeah. Like, where is it all happening? Where?
South Australia.
Thank you. It's Australia, as it always
has
been.
I think that's accurate. Although, we don't know. Let me ask you this question. This will blow your mind. If the universe is infinite, is not every point technically the center of
the
universe?
You're totally blowing my mind, man. Was this your high school conversations when you were high?
hey. No.
It was college.
What are you talking about?
So Australia is the center of the universe right now because Elon's been down there doing some battery stuff and doing some flying to other planets stuff.
So he's been flying to other planets on batteries?
We're going to get to that. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, he went down for the International Aeronautical Congress. And this is an update of what he did last year. Remember last year he says, I'm going to Mars. It's going to be great.
He showed
some pretty pictures. And
yeah, that
was
in
cool.
Guadalajara, Mexico.
So this has been updated. And let me give you some of the summary points and then you guys can discuss. So the basis of going to Mars and going to the moon and doing some other stuff is a new rocket called the BFR.
What's that stand for?
Big rocket. You know what I'm saying?
You know, I love.
No, I don't, Mel. What?
It's big f***ing rocket, Tom.
No, you have to say it like this. Big effing rocket, Mel.
Big
you
effing.
Can't use the F word.
Yeah, I love seeing that acronym in USA Today, New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times. all over the world, the BFR. And I look at people as they read it, and they're like, oh, that must stand for something like rocketry and something like physics-like. And they don't want to ask the question, because I've had this conversation. They don't want to ask the question. Right. So what does BFR
mean?
But let's
be serious about that. I actually think that's a bit of a disservice to the whole process, because what if you had small seven-year-old children, like a little boy who was really interested in science and followed everything Elon said, and he was like, what's BFR, Daddy?
You just say, that's the name of the rocket. But what does it mean? It's just the name. It's like, you know, it's like Tesla. It's just a name.
No, but BFR. But Tesla's named after a person.
Yeah. It's just BFR.
BFR.
It's named after, I think it's from, was it Wolfenstein where they had the BFR? One of those games back in the day.
I'm sorry, what, nerd alert?
Yeah. This is where
it
comes from.
Did you just quote something from Wolfenstein's castle?
Where do you think Elon got this from? It was from a classic video game, and the big gun to kill the big monster to finish the game was the BFR, BFG, the big effing gun.
I thought it was maybe because when they were in the conference room at SpaceX, we got Falcon 9, it's launching, it's landing, it's great. What's next, Elon? And Elon describes this vision of this multi-engined Raptor rocket, etc. Everybody in the room gets together and says, whoa, that's a big f-ing rocket.
So this big rocket, whose name we can't possibly work out what it means, is has got 42 engines.
Not it's just engines.
New engines.
Raptor engines. Raptors.
Not the Merlin. That's what's being used right now.
Ones. Yeah, not those little Merlins.
Raptors. No. It's larger than the Saturn V. It has a cargo area that's the same as an A380. In terms of economies of scale, I said, look, if you make these rockets bigger, then the cost per kilogram of putting stuff into orbit goes down, down, down. They're going to go to Mars in 2020, 2022, somewhere there.
2022, yes. Two rockets.
Yes.
2024, four more rockets.
Four more.
Total, six rockets in 4 years.
Yeah.
2024, two rockets have humans on them.
That is correct. First two rockets, they have stuff on them. Although, how does the stuff get unloaded on those first two rockets?
Robots, AI, all of those kind of things. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
So imagine a scenario. He sends the first two rockets to Mars with a bunch of AI robots, and they set up everything else, and they're like, you know what? No one else can go. This is our planet.
So they say the first one's going to go over there, and they're going to try and do some scouting, find the best water to make propellant. And these are, and this is important, he said these are aspirational goals. Last time he just came and said, we're going to send a person to Mars in 2018 and all this stuff. And he's like, I got a lot of criticism for that. This time, these are aspirational goals. This is what we're going to aim for. We may fail, but this is what we're going to try and achieve.
He was always saying 2022.
I thought he was saying 2040 originally.
He was saying 2020, 2022 was going to be that's why we went over this last week, when Mars and Earth are in opposition. So 2022 was his plan for the first launch, and he was hoping to get humans up on the next one, 2024. He thinks it's going to take 40 to 100 years to really get a million people on Mars. I mean, he's, that part he didn't talk about anymore. He just showed some cool pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And how are they going to pay for this? He says that
cookie sales.
He said underwear sales, none of these things seem very smart. But what could be smart is that by next year they will be putting up more rockets than anybody else in the world. In fact, they'll be putting up more than half of the rocket flights, and that will help pay for it.
Yeah, so one of the things, this is going to get disjointed at this point, you're talking about how many rockets a year. There's 60 launches a year, he said. That's worldwide.
Approximately, in all of the companies launching things into
all of
the space. All of
the countries, everybody. But he's talking about needing to do something like 5 launches a day when it's that season when Earth and Mars are close together. So to actually get one of these BFRs to Mars, you have to launch it first, the BFR. Then you have to launch 4 or 5 supply ships full of fuel to pack the thing up there full of fuel. And so this is launch, land, repeat, over and over. And you've got a very narrow window, like a few months, narrow window, to get all of this done. That's going to require a really fast turnaround time for launches. And that's part of what he's showing and talking about in this video. It's not only just making the Raptor engine. It's not only making the BFR. It's not, you know, it's the whole process from soup to nuts has to be ramped up and developed. And there's some pretty cool stuff that he said. I mean, this was one of the most aspirational space talks that I think he's given. I don't know if you want to talk more about it. But
yeah, let's go into some of the further details about how big this thing and what all that means. I mean, it's so big that it can go up there and basically gobble up old satellites that are in the way.
Yeah, so he says that their plan, and they've already started to, they've ordered the equipment for the start of the build of the BFR. They've already made the Raptor engine. They've tested it like 42 times. They say it's reliable. They've gotten good thrust out of it. They've been dialing it up, getting the pressures within the rocket engine higher and higher to make it so that it can reach the thrust that's necessary to push big, heavy loads up. They said they're going to build up a like a stock of Falcon 9s, of Dragon capsules, and then they're going to stop building that. And they're going to turn all their efforts towards building the BFR. So they're going to start ramping up the production of the Raptor engine. And that engine is a pretty amazing engine. It's the most powerful engine. It's running on this methane-oxygen combination, which has not really been used much in the past for big rockets going up into space. They've already ordered the equipment and the tooling to make the big main tanks. And I don't know if you remember seeing that big black round sort of carbon fiber tank.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big sort of impediment to making rockets this size is how you pressurize and store all that fuel. And they've gotten successful with that already.
He sort of started at the beginning of his presentation exploding one of them, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, they pushed so much fuel into it. They wanted to see at what point it would explode.
What and it was looked its like, fail rate?
It looked like a big balloon that
it
went
poop, did, yeah.
Pop.
It was big and full and lovely.
They're going to start building the first BFR in second quarter of 2018.
Are they building it here and moving it to Canaveral?
So that was one of the problems. You know, Falcon 9 is as big as it is because it is the largest size of like a tube-ish, you know, tube sort of thing that they can put on a truck and get through underpasses.
It's tube-ish.
So the tube-ishness of the Falcon 9 maxes out the transport through our intercontinental highway system. So they're going to have to build this either in Texas near their new launch site or in Florida near that launch site. My guess, Texas.
My guess, they will build it somewhere like here, the main components, and then take it over there and do assembly.
No, were you not listening to the gentleman?
You don't have to make one big tube at once. You can do them together.
You have to make one big giant tube at once.
Oh, that's upsetting.
It has to, because they use this spinning, super high speed rotating welding device to bring the edges of the aluminum together. And once you've done that, it's done. You've got a big rocket.
You can't move it.
They can make the engines here, but they have to make the big carbon fiber explodey bit. No, that's the tank.
Yeah.
So that's different.
Can they build that here?
No.
Can they build something
they
here?
Engines. We just talked about
that. Yeah, but I want
They
I
can
want
build the
big.
Engines. They can build some of the internal components and move them. But why would you? Instead of just building it all in one place.
Well, because they've got a nice little rocket factory down the road here. Why would you build another rocket factory?
Yeah, because that's the only rocket factory in the entire country, right? Is the one in Hawthorne.
It's right there. It's cool. It's near us. I want to see it. I'm saying build it here because I want to go see it.
So they're transitioning to this Raptor engine, which is a big change. That means that no longer will they be using RPG, which is rocket propellant grade kerosene. They're not going to be using that anymore. They're going to start using methane, right? So they're going to come to Mel's house for a constant supply.
Yes,
they're not using those on the Falcon 9s, though.
No,
the
they're
heavies.
Not. So once they transition to the Raptor, they're going to transition fuel source completely. And Elon explained that you can make methane from CO2 in the atmosphere and water using this Sabatier reaction and lots and lots and lots and lots of solar panels. So this can be a less carbon emitting process. If you're pulling the carbon out of the atmosphere, you don't have to use the carbon that's that black stuff in the ground. That he mentioned that the propulsive landings, right? That's what we've been watching Falcon 9 do over and over and over again, have gotten to be so precise they won't need legs on the rockets. They will just bring the rocket down to a landing site that has a cuff and boom, the rocket lands. Period. Like when, a plane lands.
When he said that, I thought, okay, maybe, but still put legs on it anyway. Just little legs. Just
I saw some renderings of it sitting on legs on Mars.
On Mars, maybe, because there's no cuff on Mars for it to land
on. You can't
on.
Build a cuff? So now they got two different designs, cuff and no cuff?
Cuff and no cuff. Cuffless. Cuffless.
Oh, yeah, it's another cuffless landing by SpaceX.
Today, they make Falcon 9s with and without landing legs because there are missions that go into polar orbit that is so high up they can't re-land the booster. It's out of gas. So they just splash it down. So the BFR payload can be huge. So just numbers. The payload bay of the BFR is 8 stories tall. And it can fit 9 of the original Falcon 1 rockets inside of it.
Inside, Mel. You can put them in there. You can take them with you to Mars and just shoot Falcon 9s off while you're there.
He showed like some designs where they had cabins in the cargo area. Where they could take like, they'd have 40 cabins that could sleep, you know, 2 or even as many as 5 people at a time. I don't want to be on the economy version of that for like 6 months, 5 people in a little cabin.
But he said he thought it would be about 2 per, 2 per cabin.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to dump your $250,000 or $500,000 to go to Mars in some really, really uncomfortable
Somebody's
going to
show up at Mars 6 months pregnant. I'm just telling you that right now.
And we're going to find out the effects of gestating in space. And it's not going to be pleasant. It's going to eat people. But go on.
The Delta wing. So they've added a Delta wing to it, which is new. It's got some kind of split flap system. And I thought, that's weird. He always talks about, you don't need to do this because you're going in space. You're going to Mars. There's not enough atmosphere to make a difference. And then there was something bigger at
this
the end.
This is where he lost me a little bit, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
He's like, well, what if I want to land on another planet? Hey, buddy, hey, focus. Let's get to a planet.
Well, he's looking for ways to make money. But one last thing he did say was that this whole business of automatic rendezvous and docking, they have been developing with the Dragon capsule, right? So they're going repeatedly to the space station. But every time they get the Dragon capsule up near to the space station, they have to stop. And the space station has to reach out with that Canadian arm, grab the
capsule, bring
it in. You know why?
No.
Because things in space can go crashy crash.
Oh, crashy boomy boom.
And there was, you know, that there's that podcast, what is it called? Curious Droid. And he does a piece on what happens when you crash in space. And you know what? It's really bad.
Why?
So they had like some Russian space station that was up in space.
Yes.
And they were trying to do some sort of a early docking system. And there were some political problems and like money didn't get paid to the company that developed the docking system. So they tried to do it just by sight, like looking out from little corners of their space station and stuff. And they crashed a supply capsule into the space station and ripped off a bunch of the solar panels and popped a hole in it. And they had to like there was an evacuation process. So you don't want any of that to happen. But SpaceX is connected to Tesla. And you know what? I know Tom might say differently, but autopilot's pretty freaking good.
Oh, pretty freaking good.
I came here almost the whole way on autopilot. Man, that was sweet.
Autopilot 1?
But you weren't trying to deck in space. I don't know how we got
That's
here.
That's true. So they're using the same types of technology to dock in space. And their plan with the BFR, of course, is to be able to have automatic rendezvous, docking, and transfer of propellant. That's explosive.
Did you see how they were going to do the propellant transfer? I thought that was pretty darn cool.
Oh, yeah. They're sort of like insects mating.
So they back up to each other, the two backs, the fueling vessel and the regular vessel, and they link together, and then they just rotate so the fuel is on the top. I don't know if there is a top in space. And then the fuel just drips into the other one.
You mean like away from Earth? and then gravity of Earth pulls it into the other rocket.
I don't know how that works, to be completely honest with you. It depends on how high you are, right, where the gravitational aspects of are. There are other bodies in space that have
gravitational. At the height we're talking about, the Earth has significant gravitational pull.
Significant or insignificant?
Very significant.
For sure significant. Yeah, like, I like the sound effects, by the way. Live sound design by Mel Herbert over there. It's not distracting at all when I'm trying to have a conversation.
He showed one great slide where he showed all of the major rockets forever launching into near-Earth orbit and deep space. And they were like small to really big. And BFR was the biggest, the most powerful. And then
it would almost have to be based on its name, correct?
Yes. BFR, the biggest.
It's the biggest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's the iffiest.
And so he then said, but when it comes to cost per kilogram launched into space, they re-sorted this slide of rockets. It becomes the cheapest.
As long as you can reuse them.
Absolutely. That is
based
key.
On reusability.
Yeah. So very exciting. Very exciting. SpaceX put it all online.
Yes.
And
you
can watch
SpaceX.
It.
.com.
And if you're into the space, you should watch it.
You should watch it even if you're not into the space, because it is pretty cool overall plan. And then he pulled
something extra.
An Apple.
Yes.
He pulled a Steve Jobs.
Yes.
He pulled a one more thing out of his pocket.
Yes.
And what did you guys think of that?
So let's describe what he does. So he does this whole thing, and it's a little bit disjointed. It's a bit here and there, but it's pretty cool. And then he goes, oh, and by the way.
Yeah.
Why should we just do this on to the moon or to the space station or to the Marses when this would be a really cool way to get around, I don't know, Earth?
Earth.
So then you take your BFR, you fire it up, everybody hops on and you fire it up and you go at 18,000 miles an hour and you go over from, say, LA to Sydney in 25 minutes, for example. And so he said this could be the new way of transporting, the rapid transport which we've been hoped for, to truly bring the world together as a small community. We can go anywhere in the world in less than an hour. Most flights would be less than 30 minutes. This is, wow.
Excuse me, I don't think LA to Sydney was actually on the list, because I'm looking at the list right here.
LA to London, 24 minutes,
I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
32 minutes.
Please don't pass this house too much, because the point is it's fast. It wasn't actually 32 minutes. It was 34, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, the flight is going to be delayed by 2 minutes.
So the idea is that you do the same sort of thing that we've just talked about. You go into low Earth orbit and you go really fast and then you come back down. So this is exciting. This is amazing. This is science fiction. And there's a really great Wired magazine article that says this: all hail Elon Musk. First of his name, King of the Martians, and of the first mole men. Projector of tubes, the unabated breaker of industries, father of dragons, and now maybe uniter of the seven continents. This is very well written. So it's like, this is a great idea. And they talked to a person called Olds, is his name, saying, well, there's some downsides to this, though. It's theoretically possible, but just consider this. First of all, what about the crushing G-forces when you take off and land?
Yeah.
Okay, spacemen can do that, but grandma's not going to be able to do that. Thank you very much.
I don't want to go to London with grandma in 24 minutes. I'm just going to throw that out there right now.
That's the only way to go to London is 24 minutes with
grandma. Yeah, no, it would be great, but I don't want grandma to get crushed.
She's going to get crushed by the G-forces.
I mean,
how about taking your infant, newborn?
I got a pneumo, and I'm going to hit on a rocket with massive G-force. That doesn't sound good.
It's bad. Now, weightlessness is going to be a problem, but that could be an upside. You're like, and on this flight for like 20 minutes, you get to float around like a spaceman. So that's not a downside. The sonic booms are bad, though. They're going to be some boomy-boomy because this thing is going to leave and re-enter quite quickly. So that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, it goes fast.
So you're going to have to do it offshore, right?
Uh-huh.
And that's why the renderings that they showed were sort of, you take a little boat out to the rocket that's offshore and then you go.
So as long as you don't live in the middle of the country, you can get to these places quickly. It'll take you longer to get from, say, Iowa to the ocean spaceport than it will to get you to Johannesburg after said trip to spaceport.
So you have to add to that amazing 24 minutes the time it takes to get there. So maybe you have to get on a boat and you're in New York, and it's best case scenario, you have to take a boat like an hour out to go there. So it's not going to be 24 minutes. That's a bit of hocus pocus. But then this Olds guy says, you know, really the way to do this is just super fast, supersonic planes.
Yeah.
But you got to take that with a bit of grain of salt, because he's a guy that makes supersonic fast planes. So of course he's not going to like Elon's idea.
Right.
But I definitely see the points. The crushing G-forces on the way up, and when the big rocket comes and has to stop, that's a lot of braking.
I actually put out a tweet offering the advice that, you know, Zofran, That's an anti-vomiting medicine on Dancetron. Should probably be part of your ticket. Like maybe you tear off a corner of the ticket and it's like a little tab and you just...
That is my favorite named medication, by the way, yeah. On Dancetron. On I dance. Think it should be like a TV show.
And
welcome Blitzen to On Dancetron.
And Blitzen. And then and also barf bags. You know, barf bags work in airplanes. They're great if you need one. But in space, they're not so effective. So I offered to help him design, you know, the SpaceX barf bag to get things going, you know, to make sure that they're prepared when it comes time for grandma to get on the BFR.
There's not even enough time vacuum for based. Like drink service.
No drink service.
Mm-mm. You got to get drunk on the boat out to the spaceport, man.
How am I going to kind of work on my laptop? Or what if I want to put my book down for a moment and go take a leak?
You can't.
Not.
Well,
yeah.
This is what one, some of the
book.
Velcro book. Hey, there's a whole Belkin's got a whole new line they can develop.
Yeah, people are saying silly things like that. Well, business people are not going to be able to do work on the planet. It's 24 minutes. What if you,
like my ring is bothering me. I take my ring off for a moment and then go on.
But it'll make wearables that much more effective, right? Because they won't be floating around. So you'll have your Apple Watch if you wanted to like send a text.
True.
So this all sounded good to me until I actually read stuff like this. Like, oh yeah, that's right. There's a reason why
you can't
this
do
isn't
this.
Happen tomorrow.
This isn't going to happen.
You
know.
So why did he bring this up? Was he serious, or was this just like, oh, and theoretically you could do these things if you're like a 25-year-old astronaut, you could go from. Why?
Well,
why,
I think
why
for him, he's probably looking at it: is this another possible revenue stream for me? Or is there a group of folks who would love? And there's a long list. Robert gave us a list of like 50 things, right? But of 50 places you could go from and to, right? But there's probably 7 or 8 routes on this planet that people want to take a lot and would love to take very quickly. And might be willing to pay a premium to do that.
Yeah, like how about Sydney to London in 51 minutes?
Yeah, I think that would be great. I think the Queen would love to see all of her places in 15 minutes.
She'll die.
Yeah, there's going to be another Queen, though. You know
true.
That, right?
A younger queen.
She's not the last, like, queen ever.
You know, when you're the doctor on the BFR heading from, like, Los Angeles to Johannesburg, and they say, is there a doctor on board? Because some man who's, like, 50 years old just went unconscious, and you realize that how many people have Barry aneurysms, these little aneurysms in their brain that we usually don't even know about until something really dramatic happens, and BFR is pretty dramatic.
And now I'm out. I'm out again. Thanks, Robert. I was like just about getting – remember the first time we talked about this Mars thing? I'm like, going to Mars is dumb. I got pretty excited about potentially going to Mars, and Robert has killed any hope that I would be going to Mars.
So, yeah, this is revenue stream. He talked about the BFR can put enormous satellites into space and even groups of satellites into space. You send up one rocket with like 9 satellites in it. That's pretty amazing.
So you could do the entire Iridium – in one trip,
probably so. Exactly. He said that it can carry a satellite that's up to 9 meters in diameter.
So that's 9 times. He said they could put a space telescope out there with the mirror 9 times bigger than Hubble.
That's amazing.
Hubble's made some amazing images of the universe.
They don't have to send as many resupply missions to the International Space Station. He put up a picture, an artist rendering of this BFR docking to the space station, and it made the space station look pretty puny.
It looked silly, actually.
He said you could get to the moon if you put the BFR in a elliptical, high elliptical orbit, then you refuel it. You could send that to the moon with a lot of stuff in it and bring it back without having to refuel on the moon.
What kind of stuff? Like toxic waste?
Like a moon base.
Like could we send our garbage to the moon?
Alpha 1. Moon base. And then, of course...
He was angry about the moon.
Yeah,
he's like,
why?
It's 2017. Really? We need a moon base already. Come on.
Do we?
Yes, we do.
How about this? Maybe we need better education for everyone.
I think that is a straw man comparison. You can do both. You can have moon bases
this?
And space travel, and you can have good education.
Okay.
How about this? I'm a student.
You can be educated on the
You're
moon.
You're a doctor.
Well, I'm going to think back to like when I was in
all
high
right,
school.
All right.
I was a student, mm-hmm. and things like Star Trek kind of inspired me to kind of be interested in the sciences. And what if we have no science significant science things really not. I'm like, no moon mission plan, no Mars mission plan. Mm-hmm. And then all of it, and the kids are in school and they're like, well, I don't know science. I think I'll study something else. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, we have this amazing vision, inspiring how many more people will study harder, learn more, and become more accomplished in the sciences just from this imagined.
Maybe they should take grammar classes. I'm just going to throw that out there.
I would summarize it another way. The and this is what Ellen gets very excited about. The trickle-down science effects of these giant things like getting to the moon are enormous. And so what you learn here, the technologies you learn here, the science trickle-down is quite enormous. So it's really hard to put that in economic terms. This is very expensive. But he's not even talking about you and I paying for it. He's talking about just private industry. They're going to pay for it because they want their satellites up there. I'll put them up there. And as while I'm doing that, I'm going to work on my big rocket. So this is not even like this is a tax question. Oh, I don't want my taxes to go up to go to the stupid moon.
Right.
This is just him doing it through private funds, which is not something that we've even thought about before. The moon mission was incredibly expensive, and a lot of people were against it. Although I wonder how many of those people after it was done were against it. But this isn't your tax dollars we're even talking about.
Right.
That's
it's amazing.
True. You know, we got Velcro and cellular phones out of moon missions.
We got nonstick pans.
Yes.
Oh.
We got GPS.
Yes.
GPS, pretty good.
We got a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
We got pictures of the moon.
We did. We did get pictures of the moon.
We really refined the ability to do poopy in space, which is big.
We got those flags that don't need wind.
Yeah.
Just stick out.
That's right.
We
got
straight.
Astronaut ice cream.
Oh, that's delicious.
It's so good.
So keeping with the space theme, was it in Auckland? It was in Auckland. The conference.
Don't point at him.
I thought it was in South Australia, mate. Adelaide.
Oh, Adelaide. It was the other A.
Auckland's in New Zealand.
You're right.
Not even in the same country.
But it's an A. And sometimes I get a little mixed up
Americans
on letters.
Americans.
My apologies to everybody in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, wow.
Lockheed Martin sort of, quote, trumped SpaceX.
Don't use that word.
I know, but that's what the title of this article from SMH.com. I can't remember what the website was called.
SmellyMelHubbardus.com.
Lockheed Martin presented its Mars plan, the Sydney Morning Herald. Thank you, Tom. And they presented their Mars plan. And I don't know, I put this in a little late because I've been working all weekend, but there's a video in this article that is super cool. They did a great job. And they showed sort of this stepwise mission to get us to Mars, but not really ever on Mars. We never go to Mars. We stay in a Mars base camp, which orbits Mars. But their sort of stepwise approach to getting to Mars seems really cool, too. And I wonder how much did SpaceX kind of push them to make this sort of aspirational video?
But they just get close to Mars. Well, what is the point of that?
I was going
to
say, can I do a Tom? Why? You're right there. It's just there. It's down there. Why don't you take the next step and go down there?
Hey, would you guys like to go really close to an amazing thing, but not quite into it?
Yeah. Well, so again, they're a lot more conservative, and they see humans in this orbiting space base somewhere in the, like, 2030s. They showed, like, humans going to Mars's moons for, like, mining. It's a little more sort of commercial-oriented. And after reading, you know, in through the Mars series, Red Mars, Green Mars, not yet Blue Mars, you know, mining is going to be a big deal. These places are, you know, you can pollute the hell out of them, and nobody is there to see it.
Oh, that's so great.
You know, there are some folks out there who they just see dollar signs when they think about going to these heavenly bodies. So moving on to Tesla. Model 3s. They're starting to move the Model 3s out east. And so there's a video online. It's from Electric, or should I say,
No Electric!
Showing people at the Gigafactory getting their test drives, which is what I reported happening at the Sentinella Service Center a couple weeks back. And they're giggling and laughing and loving their Model 3s. So the Model 3s are continuing to roll out. I just saw a tweet last night. It was from 2 days ago, of a Model 3 delivered that's vehicle ID number in the high 400s.
Ooh.
So they're coming out. They're maybe not 1,500 at this point, but they are coming out. That's a lot more than 50.
That's
Tom.
Very correct. 400 yes. is much more than 50.
It's not an order of magnitude. No, it is not.
We keep saying this week after week after week that it is amazing how they've kept a lid on how many they've actually produced. At some point, they're going to have to come out and say, we've made 500.
Well, I can tell you when that sometimes going to be.
When is the quarterly report?
It'll be that quarterly earnings call, though. Somebody will ask the question, and he'll have to give guidance, as it were, whether or not they met guidance or overachieved the guidance.
And I just popped onto Tesla's website, Q3 2017 reporting date. Please stay tuned, as date has not yet been set.
We're trying to work on the numbers a bit.
So somebody found something very interesting on the Tesla website.
I did. Another tweet I got. I don't credit this to everybody, and so I apologize out there for scamming you, but you did tweet me about this. Thank you. This is a new page on the Tesla.com website. And if you click on it, it goes to like tesla.com/semi or no, truck.
Forward slash truck.
And it's got that like ghostly headlight lit front view of their semi. And it just says 10.26.17. Says no more. It's just in pure Tesla fashion, a teaser.
You can't really get to it from the main Tesla website. You have to do the /truck.
So again,
there's
Tesla.
Not a link that I saw from the front page, but if you do tesla.com/truck, you can see a truck and the date.
In silhouette.
But you know,
let me ask you a question. Do you give a crap? No.
Of course
I do. 6 months ago, did you care about, boy, I really hope somebody comes up with a really nice looking semi-trailer?
Yes.
I didn't even think about it.
Why?
I look at this and I'm like, that looks like an incredible machine.
But we've talked about the electrification of the trucks and the autonomous trucks, right? Many, many times on this, where we talked about autonomous trucks would hopefully free up the traffic corridors and stuff like that.
But I guess I'm expressing the wrong emotion. I look at this picture of this truck and I go, oh my God, that is science fiction. That is beautiful. I want a semi-trailer.
Well, see, that part of it is weird. to me, right? Because visually, it looks like a truck. It's a truck.
Visually,
it looks
fantastic. It's got
it's a truck.
Curves and
it's a truck. It's a trucks are beautiful, really, in themselves. Like, I've always been a little bit fascinated with semi-tractor trailer parts because they have, like, apartments in the back of them, right? They're massive. People can live. I've always been like, what is happening back there? I really want to know.
Good.
I've never been in like the living quarters of a semi truck. The most shocking thing that I learned about semi trucks in the last few months is that they don't have stick shifts. They're not like
anymore.
75 gears. They're all automatic. I'm like, I can drive a truck. Like
15 gears.
I wouldn't want to have to reverse a truck into anything, but truck drivers are amazing.
Yeah, no, just drivers. To be able to fit those things where they put them.
Incredible.
Unbelievable. I drove one in a parking lot once when I was like a teenager.
Yeah.
A couple of friends of mine and I befriended a truck driver.
Stole a truck.
Who used to come and park kind of in our neighborhood to sleep every so often. And whenever he would, we'd come up and
steal his truck.
Knock on his door. Hey, Joe, are you in there? Are you in there, Joe? And he let us in. And one time he let us each try and start the truck, you know, by grinding down his gears, maybe his, you know, at the end of his lease, and it didn't really matter so much.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Sorry, Joe.
But it was really scary and cool. And I agree, Tom, and I agree, Mel. It would be cool to have an electric semi-tractor trailer, but
it'd be so cool.
It's just less carbon.
You should get one.
Less carbon.
Yeah, it's probably only going to be $1 million.
You should be a long-haul trucker, Mel.
Yeah.
Maybe I will in my retirement years.
Yeah, you just drive
just
the country.
See the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up on a farm, and we had a lot of semis, and it was the exact experience you were talking about. It's these giant gear shifts, and it took like a week to get going, and if anybody got in front of you, it took a week to stop. And he says this is going to drive like a sports car.
Yeah.
I want to see this thing whipping around on October 26th, ladies and gentlemen, boys
and
girls.
Oh, I
want to
be there. Where is the event? In Fremont?
Hawthorne.
Oh, it's a local.
It's very local.
So we could do the like fence grab thing.
Yeah.
And stare through
and
the fence.
Stand outside the fence.
Like. Maybe we could just like parachute in.
No.
No.
There's an airport right there. I don't
exactly.
Think you can, there's some sort of FAA regulations about parachuting into things near airports.
Robert, can you drive your car, electric car, coast to coast? Is it possible?
I have gone halfway. I've gone to Boulder, Colorado, about halfway.
I was going to say, that's not halfway.
Well, it felt like it was.
I bet it did. Yeah, I bet it did.
But you know what? I can. But unfortunately, other EVs cannot. And this is a piece from cars.com that caught my eye because it shows an actual map where they went on the...
An actual map, not a hypothetical map or just a map.
Just it's
a map.
Not just
maybe,
the
maybe call it a quote actual map, Robert.
He got this off actualmaps.com.
It's like a really good graphic. It has a map of the United States and it shows the main route across the United States, mm-hmm. which is like I-70, and it shows how many recharging stations, like fast recharging stations, there are along the way. And basically, Tesla's the only one can do it because there's many places where there is 1, 3, 6, only that many fast charging stations in big open gaps. And yeah. they talk about how all the other car manufacturers can't really do it. This article really doesn't have a whole lot of points to it, but the bottom line is that I found is that no other car manufacturer can send their EVs coast to coast in any kind of a timely, you know, reasonable, doable fashion. And does that really matter? Do we really do that many cross-country drives?
I don't know that we do that many cross-country drives, and I was listening to last week's show, but we do a lot of 500-mile drives, mm-hmm. 600-mile drives, 900-mile drives, things like that. California to Utah, yes. California to Colorado, as you said.
Yeah.
Other places to yeah. other places as well, like New York to people from the upper Northeast drive down south.
Like going people to Florida?
People in the Midwest. Like my cousins drive from Chicago to South Dakota. So there are a lot of those types of drives
sure. yeah.
that actually – aren't super fun without a Tesla either. And I've driven, I've driven to San Francisco in the S Model 60.
Yes.
And it's not super fun.
Yes.
Either, because even with supercharging, kind of got to stop 3 times mm-hmm. for longer probably than you would want to.
Yeah.
Because I like to make that run pretty quickly in a gas vehicle. You can just haul ass. But, you know, getting better. I'm hoping in my Model 3 I'll be able to make that run much better.
Yeah. There is certainly a marketing, even though most people will live their entire lives and not drive across the United States or any country as big as that. But it is good for marketing to yes. say, and now you can drive across the country in your electric car on our supercharger network. Marketing yeah. done. Boom. Now, you'll never actually do that, but it's like me. There's superchargers everywhere. I don't actually use them that much, but it's good to know they're there. It's good to know I could drive yeah. across the country if I wanted to.
Well, it's really good to know you could drive 600 miles in a reasonable amount of time. Like, to me, that's actually way more important than driving across the country. Those 400 and 500 mile runs, LA to San Francisco, LA. What was LA to Tucson? You talked about
LA
your
to Phoenix.
Your
yeah, it's like 400 and something miles.
Your grandpa wanting yeah. to drive there and not being able to. Right?
You can't do that in a Bolt. You can't do that easily in a Bolt. In a Tesla, easy.
So he would have to find a CCS charger between here and it's Phoenix.
Phoenix.
Right, between here and Phoenix, and he'd have to stop for at least an hour and a half, maybe longer, if he could make it on one stop.
One fill up, yeah.
How many miles is it, do you know?
It's 440 or something. So theoretically, he could drive halfway and fill up and keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pain in the butt. In a supercharger network, not a problem.
So the main thing I get from this is... Hello?
Is this thing on?
Is this thing on? To municipalities and states and the federal government and legacy car makers, do something about your fast charging systems. There aren't enough. There are barely enough Tesla fast charging systems, and that's yeah. all being done by an individual small car manufacturer.
Right, so why is it a call out to municipalities and the federal government to do it? Why can't the if Tesla did it as a non market cap company for the most part, why can't a company like Chevy, who is a big market cap company? The problem is it's the fear factor. And again, we talked about this last week, so I don't know that we want to go into it super in depth, but there's a big investment in that aspect of it when you're not sure of your clear vision, right? Tesla, from the very beginning, clear vision. I want to build these long-range cars that you can use for these long hops, and I'm going to make it possible. The supercharger may have actually been in some ways, Tesla's marketing budget.
Yeah. Is it boring to people in there? Hey, out there, is this boring to you? We seem to have this revelation like every other week.
It's not a revelation, but I think the more we dive deep into it, the more we realize this is the key.
The supercharger network is the defining characteristic of the Tesla, at least as important as the speed and the sexiness and how good the car is. The supercharger network made this company. They got it before we did.
And even if it's psychological only, that's super important.
So why I'm saying big government is that who built the interstate highway system? The interstate highway system.
I think Bob and
I thought it was Jim Jeff. Jim Interstate. Isn't that why they called it the interstate highway system?
No.
Thomas Elder Interstate? Tesla Interstate.
So that whole highway system was built, and that was an explosion for the car manufacturers. They could now sell cars that people would drive from Dallas to Houston or from Denver to Los Angeles because there was a big, reliable, easy-to-travel interstate highway system.
Mm.
The legacy car manufacturers, I still don't expect that they are going to do jack when it comes to a charging system. I just don't think so. We are literally subsidizing them by providing roads onto which people can put their cars, while Tesla goes the extra mile or extra hundreds of miles, producing its own fueling system.
So what you're saying is we're subsidizing the highway system.
Yes.
But the highway system is about commerce in a lot of ways.
It was about military to begin with.
And then we're subsidizing the oil and gas industries in a lot of ways.
Are we? It's a rhetorical question.
Oh, I was like, oh, has he not been paying attention? But Tesla in and of itself is getting subsidies as well. Let's not sort of candy coat over the fact that it's gotten a lot of people to buy cars based on subsidies. It's made hundreds of millions of dollars, I would assume, at this point. Actually, I don't know what the total number of money they've gotten from those CARB credits that they've spent. It's probably quite a bit, though.
Yeah.
So the point is, again, when I talk to people about getting a real car, a car that can do the 99.9%, it's a Tesla.
Yeah.
And this is what always comes back. I have these great discussions with people about, oh, this is a good electric car, and that's a good electric car, and that's a good electric car. And then the end, my summary point, but if you want the car that can do basically everything like Tom and I need to drive to Oregon, then it's only going to happen once every now and then, but it's a Tesla. And that's the only going to be a Tesla for as far forward as I can see.
And just to remember back, it was September 24th, 2012, when they unveiled the supercharger system.
That all being said, that can't be the only way that this electrifying of transportation changes, because I think you mentioned something last week as well where you talked about having just the J1772s everywhere gives people a lot more comfort in driving, in buying an electric car for their city use. Again, most people park their cars more than they use their cars.
True.
So if you can have a consistent, reliable place to plug your car in, you're going to be more comfortable even with a Leaf, an older Leaf at 80 miles of range or something that only has 10 or 12 miles of range. If you can know you can go that 12 miles and plug it in. The problem is even those cars, like the Volt itself that I just bought, it takes like 4 or 5 hours even on a level 2 charger to recharge. That has to change, in my opinion.
Yes, absolutely.
In the brave new world, you're going to have a little electric car that's very cheap. You drive around all day, and then when you do have to drive to Oregon or you do have to do 500-600 miles, you'll just get an Uber Tesla.
Exactly. And that's also part
on
of
the network. And like, oh, well, I need to do this. Somebody else is going to drive me on Tesla Loop or somebody. I'm just going to pay the bucks.
Tesla!
So let us move on.
Here we go. BMW 530e was announced. It's a performance version of the BMW famous 500 series. It's a quick, a peppy car. Very interesting sounding. It's a hybrid, so it has some gasoline in it. And they have now developed a drive on top of inductive charger that they're putting out. It's actually pretty cool. I give them props for this. It's a 13.3 amp 240-volt circuit, which allows you to charge their smallish battery in just a matter of like 3 hours. And one thing that was cool, so I said this is not going to be a Tesla killer, right, because it uses gas. So they got to drop that kind of nomenclature. But what's cool is they gave this statistic, which I have not yet seen, carbon dioxide per kilometer rating, 44 grams per kilometer. I'd like to see how they get that and if we can actually reliably use that for other cars so that we can get to the point where we, you know, if I run my Tesla off of my solar panels or the supercharger network, what becomes my carbon dioxide per kilometer rating?
That would depend more on its overall lifespan in that sense, right?
Well, I guess, I don't know how they calculate this. If it's simply like, here's how much carbon dioxide comes from the burning of gasoline at X efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
But if they take into account the carbon dioxide in the creation of the seats and the tires and mm-hmm. the blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm interested.
So wide open calculation.
I'm interested in this, like, what is the most efficient way to get from point A to point B? And I've been working on a Patreon. It won't be in for a few weeks. But it turns about you'll be very interested to know what is the most efficient way to get from point A to point
from
B.
From a fuel standpoint?
From a, total energy use of fuel.
Got to be walking.
It's not, because that's what I thought, and it's not even close. Patreons, it's coming up, and then I'll share it with you all.
I wish it was a horse.
Let us move on, because we already talked about the fact that Toyota and Mazda are developing a new car company. We already talked about that.
Did we?
Yeah. But let's talk about Australia again, because it's the center of the known universe.
Australia, Australia, Australia.
This is from Teslarati, and we had a man on seed, Brad Clark, mate.
Brad. Brad got a press pass for this baby because he was with Talking Tesla.
Thank you, Brad. So Brad went to the battery reveal in South Australia where they said, da-da, here is your sort of your backup battery for South Australia.
Mm-hmm.
It's about half done. And Elon did a little talky talk, about a 12-minute talk that Brad recorded for us.
And the man that's helped us deliver that is the chief executive of Tesla, Elon Musk.
Hi, everybody. Hey. All right, well, thanks for coming out. It's a bit of a drive. Thanks
for coming.
You're welcome. Well, first of all, Tesla's incredibly honored to be able to do this project for South Australia and to work with South Australia to create something that's a world-leading battery installation. This is... Yeah, I mean, when I came here, even though I realized it, I didn't quite appreciate the fact that that was actually just a piece of dirt a couple months ago. It looks sort of like it's been there for a while, but there was literally nothing there 2 months ago. So it's quite remarkable. I'd just like to say a word of appreciation to the Tesla team who've worked night and day. With the Australian government and local utilities in Nuin and everyone to really pull off a miracle to have a battery installation which already it's not fully done yet, but it's sort of at roughly the 50 megawatt level. But to have that done in 2 months is really pretty mind blowing. You can't remodel your kitchen typically in that period of time. So it's like, you know, pretty incredible job by a lot of hardworking, talented people. You can see here, of course, there's still a long way to go. The vast majority of the world is still fossil fuel powered, and this is really just the beginning. But I think what this serves as is a great example to the rest of the world of what can be done. So when this is done, which will be in just a few months, it'll be the largest battery installation as measured by power by a factor of 3 in the world. So that's like pretty mind blowing. But there's still hell of a long way to go. So, and we sort of need to do something about this. You can sort of see the CO2 levels sort of bubble along, and then it looks like a wall. It's very important that we take action and take action now. Really, time matters. It matters whether we make the transition to sustainable energy in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. It really is going to make a difference. We're doing everything we can to accelerate it, and by working with people like Jay and his team, that really will enables us to happen, and with your support as well. Thank you. All right. So as you guys know, this a year ago, the situation was pretty dire. Your first hand account. I was like, why is it so dark? It's because there wasn't any electricity. Yeah. So now there will be. Anyway, so the one tweet leads to another. And pretty soon, that. So Mike, I saw this on Twitter. It's like, sure. By the way, next day, by the way, can we do that? Yeah, exactly. Now it's 280, I hear. It's like, even more trouble. It was only a couple months ago that we met and made the announcement for the deal. And a couple months ago, none of this was here, and it was just an announcement. But talk is cheap; action is difficult. And what the reason we want to work as hard as we possibly could and get as much done as possible was to show that it's not just talk; it's reality. And in fact, everything that you see here, this whole event, everything, is powered by those packs. Right now. So there are no generators. This is all literally energy coming from that system over there. That used to be that dirt pile. And you can sort of get a sense for the progress that was made over time. I find these wind mills quite amazing. Yeah, and that's where we are today. Yeah. This is the actual power flow. Of something. Hornsdale power flow. You can get this on your phone. And there's like a phone app for it. And so then in a few months, we'll be finished with the whole system and be delivering a full 100 megawatts to South Australia. So people sometimes wonder, well, how scalable is the system? I mean, how much solar power do you really need to power Australia? And then how much battery pack space do you need? It's actually remarkably tiny. Do you see that sort of that red square? That's the amount of solar area that you need to power all of Australia. Yeah, no kidding.
Can't see it.
Exactly. it's about a tenth the area of Sydney. Just like, well, Sydney's pretty big, but still, it's about 9 pixels on the map there. And we were going to put the size of the battery pack, but it's way smaller than 1 pixel. So it's only 7 kilometers, square kilometers of batteries.
Is this happening?
It will. Yeah. It will. I mean, another way to think of it is sort of like, it's like satellites. The satellites, they're thousands of satellites going around Earth, and they're all powered with batteries and solar, all of them. And there's some that have been up there for 20 or 30 years with zero maintenance. You can't send a repair person to go up and, repair a satellite at 36,000 kilometers. So they're designed to just work for 20, 30 years with no maintenance. And really, Earth Earth is itself a satellite. It's a satellite of the sun. And so it's pretty obvious that if small satellites can be solar and battery powered, then big ones can too. There's no scalability constraint. But I think people sometimes aren't quite sure, well, how big is it actually? And I just want to show it's really not. It's like quite small. And very doable. And that is actually what the future will look like. And the faster we get there, the better. Yeah. And there's really just, there's three parts to it. You got to sort of collect the energy from the sun, store it, because the sun doesn't shine at night, and then charge electric cars for transport. And that's it, really. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for driving so far. And I hope you enjoy your night and enjoy it. So very much appreciate your support, and it's because of the support of people like you that we're able to actually get this stuff done. So thank you.
It's half done, but half operational at the same time.
I think that's the same. It's just they put
no, it's half finished, but operational.
It's operational, but they're going to add another 50 megawatts.
They ran this party off of the power pack completely.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
Power pack party.
It's kind of cool. There's a time-lapse movie of them laying the concrete and dropping down the power packs and wiring it up. It's really quick. There was a couple of videos online of the actual presentation, but they've all been taken down.
But so we have audio.
You're only going to hear it on Talking Tesla.
Brad, thank you very much. Brad also sent us some really nice pictures from the event and from outside.
So. I'm going to put them on my Twitter feed.
Yeah, very cool. So let's talk about superchargers then. We should go back. What did he say there? He didn't really say much new in this presentation, as you've just heard. It was more that we can do this very quick, and we did this very quick.
Yeah.
And thank you very much. Now, I don't know what the bet was about. Was the bet turn some batteries on?
No. The bet isn't. It doesn't end till December. That was the part that was very confusing about this article, because I read it, and they talked about the September 29th thing was when they signed the 100 days, so they had 100 more days from then to do it. Very, very confusing. I don't know when the contract was actually signed. My guess is that was done as sort of a, ooh, the 100 days, where can we do it? But they set the actual deal up so it would be successful, right? It wasn't a thing that Elon was going to fail at. He was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to be there on the 29th. That's when we'll sign the papers. Let's see what I can get done by then. And then I'll have another 100 days. That's what I think is going on here. Regardless, that's pretty amazing. This thing is pretty cool. This is going to be step one in a lot more of these things. People are going to see this. They're going to see that it's successful. It's tied to a wind farm. It can be tied to a solar farm, a combo farm. We could have these in Indio. We have a lot of wind out there. We could get rid of all of those really ugly power lines, transmission lines, and have a whole new way to do this stuff.
Yeah, so it's operating at the 50 megawatt level now, and it's planned for 100 megawatts. You know, there's not a lot of details that you can derive when two billionaires have a Twitter war back and forth, or a Twitter, you know, exchange back and forth. They don't hash out the details. So this brings me back to the last, quote, biggest, end quote.
The second biggest.
Currently
the first biggest, because the other one isn't fully operational.
That's right.
But this one.
So this is in powering through Southern California Edison, the Mira Loma site, which has to do with the leaking methane gas up here in the San Fernando Valley of Los Angeles, 80 megawatt hours. So they're almost as big as that, soon to eclipse it. And then how big will the next one, the next biggest one be, I wonder?
How big do they need to be? I guess the question is, wouldn't it be better to have a bunch of these hundreds all over the place for redundant
usage? Well, these are for very specific uses, sort of to
peaker plants.
Sort of like peaker plants, but I see the future of this is not these giant battery installs in particular places to run all of Los Angeles. It would be massive. It's to have batteries in every house, to have batteries in every building, to distribute it. I think that's where we're going for that type of energy.
But it could also take the place of, like, in Los Angeles, when you drive around, there are literally substations all over the place. All of those could turn into these in for to be in place for disasters, inevitable earthquake type disasters that are much easier, quicker to get back online potentially than.
And also to just stabilize the grid.
Yeah.
Because the grid is very, you know, millisecond by millisecond, it is fluctuating all over the place. And you can use these batteries to smooth that all out and probably take a good deal of load off of the infrastructure, the grid itself.
Yeah.
So, I'm excited.
So Elon's shown that you can do little batteries in your house, and now he's shown you can do big batteries. But again, as a number of people have pointed out, this is not about having enough battery for all of South Australia. This is infinitesimal compared to how much they would need.
Yeah.
This is to actually just smooth things out when you've got a fluctuating grid. Mm-hmm. This can turn on instantly, turn off instantly. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I want to talk about
supercharging. This charges me up, man. This so charges me up.
I'm getting a little excited about supercharging because last week, Robert had just like a trillion supercharger, you know, that were coming, that were permitted, that were out.
Right.
And this one looks like it's even bigger.
Yeah, last week was the biggest. This is a week of biggest, you know. And last week I thought we had the biggest supercharger report with 36. And this week we have 42 new superchargers on the report. So let me go through it quickly. Newly opened superchargers. Mel, are you ready?
Go.
20. Woohoo! We got three in the United States, three in the United Kingdom, two in Norway, three in Australia, including the ones that allowed all our friends in Australia to get to the battery reveal. We've got two in China, Belgium, Finland, Italy, Japan, Spain, Switzerland. They're all over the place. And then construction, 12 entering construction, seven in the United States, two in Austria, Spain, Sweden, the United Kingdom, and then 10 entering permit stage. So these are all going to be done by the end of the year. Six in the U.S., two in Quebec, Austria, Finland. This is amazing. I'm so excited. It includes another one here. It's included in the permitted is Santa Clarita, California, Mel. That's really close by. How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel good.
This one
inside.
Being on the list kind of bummed me out because I actually had a little bit of inside information about this one that I was hoping to be able to bring to the table, but it's already on the table. So I happen to know somebody who knows somebody who works for the city of Santa Clarita, and they were in these negotiations for Tesla. And what he told me was they're in negotiations to bring a dealership. So what I'm going to say to you is maybe what we're talking about is a service center potentially in the Santa Clarita area might be in the works as of right now. You heard it here potentially first if it happens. But this would be great for me because there aren't a lot of car chargers. I do curling in Santa Clarita.
Right.
So I drive the Tesla up there. And I had to plug in one day and I needed, it was about 6 miles from the rink and it was at a police station. Actually, they had two chargers right in front of a police station.
Yes.
So I parked it there.
At least your car is safe there.
And then I drove over to the to the thing. I
but
got a ride over to the
it
rink.
Was just a J1772.
Yeah, it was.
So
but I got enough to get home. I literally showed up in Santa Clarita with like 2 miles.
That's a dedicated curler thou art.
Thou art dedicated.
Especially when you're carrying around those heavy stones.
Yeah, we don't carry the stones.
So let me move on. Arecibo. Arecibo is an amazing antenna. It's a ginormous radio telescope. It's actually in a depression in the mountains. They strung all of this like cyclone fencing into a big sort of a dish shape. It is a dish shape. And they suspended above it all of these antennas. And it is the second largest radio telescope in the world. And it's used to send signals into space. They famously sent a signal to like a place where they expect there could be life. And it's like 50,000 light years away. So it take a little while for the message to get there.
50,000 years.
Yeah. And it was featured in the movie Contact with Jodie Foster.
Good movie.
Media pick from 1992. And so this ginormous telescope, unfortunately, got battered during the hurricane. One of the big radio receivers fell off of its like suspended platform and crashed through the mesh of the actual telescope. The actual grounds have not gotten that damaged. In fact, it's being used now as a refuge for people who live in the area and staff who got kind of stuck up there. But unfortunately, hurricanes don't spare science in their ravagings.
That's upsetting.
Yeah. Toyota, you know, they're not on the forefront of electric vehicles. They're not on the forefront of autonomous vehicles like Tesla, at least. But they have now created a self-driving car that has two steering wheels. And it says here, quote, to prevent robot joyriding.
So it's a really interesting picture. It's a car with two steering wheels, and it's all about autonomous driving. And it makes no sense to me at all. Because they're saying, well, we're testing autonomous driving. That's mm-hmm. why we need new two steering wheels. Like, what are you talking
they're
about?
They're testing not having somebody in the driver's seat.
But
I don't understand that part of it either, honestly, because
just sit in the driver's seat, don't use a steering wheel. And then if you need to use a steering wheel, grab the steering wheel. So they've got two steering wheels. One,
it may just
makes no sense.
It may be, you know, attached to the car slightly different in a slightly different manner. But I'm with you. I don't really understand it. Although, it's kind of cool. I wish I had this when I was teaching my daughter how to drive.
Yeah. I think they should be in every car. Yes, they should be in every car so that I can take over when I get scared.
This is from The Verge, and it was sort of like, I kind of like it. I want to be a bigger story, but to me, it really isn't. It just is like another example of a big lumbering vehicle manufacturer not pushing the envelope like Tesla.
So let's get into letters, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. I want to remind you again that Alex has this fine letter, audio letter, that's going to go in for the Patreons. One of the things I will state here, though, is that we were talking about whether charging up your electric car increases the mass.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no, it doesn't charge up the mass. You're basically moving mm-hmm. the electrons from one side of the battery over to the other side of the battery. It doesn't change the mass. Think of it sort of like lifting your car up. If you lift your car up, you've actually given it a whole bunch of energy, potential energy.
Mm-hmm.
But the mass of the car hasn't changed. So he'd explain some of these concepts that you can charge up your car, you can move a long way, but the mass hasn't actually changed. Darren Arthur wants to talk about the Tesla unveil event.
Darren says he needs one more referral to get a VIP event to the semi-truck reveal.
And he wants to give us those tickets. I'm not sure they're transferable, but
I don't think they are. We've tried this many times.
I'm sorry, but it was a great offer because he says he's in the UK and he doesn't want to spend the bucks to come all the way out here. Of course, he could have watched it or heard about it firsthand, or is it secondhand, on Talking Tesla. But as of yet, we have not been invited.
Mm-mm.
Hello, is this thing on?
David Warner has a letter here. It says, you guys, you have been a new source of humor in my life.
Humor?
In my case, humor heals. Years ago, I liked the Nerdist podcast, but lately it's degraded into listening to spoiled brats complain about the first world problems. Your show, episode 105 today, made me laugh out loud 5 times in a 30-minute period. And I'm only 3/4 of the way through it. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you heard it here first. We're stupid.
And we've stopped whining as much as we used to whine.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave.
Yes. Costa Checkles. Is that right? Costa Checkles says, look, he really, really wants to see Tom's car get crashed.
Who doesn't?
Crushed. So he is going to be a Patreon. Tom, tell us again. What was your plan here with the car? Go on. Tell us.
50 Patreons. We've probably had a few, 50 Patreons in the next month, 50
so
new Patreons.
So it's been 1 week.
Right, so that's only a buck a month.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So we have like
know.
3 more weeks to get like another 45 Patreons.
Right.
Yeah.
And I will try to find a place around here that will crush my vehicle
and we'll record it. And if you don't, I've got 2 sledgehammers. I looked in the garage. I confirmed. I have 2 sledgehammers. One's kind of small. Mm-hmm.
That's not happening, Robert. That's not option number 2.
But you said crush.
But you don't. First off, you don't crush with sledgehammers. Then what am I going to do? I'm going to have a car this is going to be like urban blight?
Wait.
No, that's not how this is working. No, we're going to crush the car professionally. Get rid of it. If we get 50 more patrons, otherwise, I don't know, you just won't see it.
Okay, wait, can I try one thing?
Oh, sure.
From like, you know, Beverly Hills Cop when he shoves the banana into the into the tailpipe?
Yeah.
I've always wanted to try that.
Yeah, sure, we can do that. Maybe we'll try a potato. Woo-hoo! Maybe we'll try the potato.
This is getting very exciting. Now, Costa also said, you know, this is actually an issue. You've got an older car.
Mm-hmm.
You could get some money for it. You could put it, sort of sell it to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But these generally older cars are way more inefficient. They're just horrible for the environment. At what point should you be doing Tom's to your ICE car, not selling it to the person who really needs a really cheap car because they have no money, versus crushing it? It's a difficult thing. I don't want to take away really cheap cars from people who need really cheap cars, but we need really cheap electric cars so that we can go crush all of these really inefficient ICE cars.
You know, I don't know that much about hashtags. In fact, they kind of make me curious, but I started a hashtag. It's called hashtag crush Tom's car.
Yeah. And anybody using it?
I don't know, but maybe we can start now and get this wave going.
Hashtag. He really is excited about seeing my car crushed.
Ian Abercrombie and Finch.
Every time.
Every it's not funny. Time.
No. We have to stop doing things like how old is the show, but you can continue with Abercrombie and Fitch, which, by the way, was never funny.
No. I will admit one thing. That joke is so lame. Yet I continue to do it. He's like, he wants to explain something to her. A gigawatt is power and is always instantaneous. A gigawatt hour is energy and is simply the amount of energy used if you create a gigawatt for 1 hour. It is, of course, the same for megawatt and kilowatt versus megawatt and gigawatt and all the stuff. And again, Alex is going to go through this in excruciatingly good detail. And I think I understood it, but I have to listen to it a couple more times.
But only for the Patreon.
Oh, there you go. John Sheen says, hey, first of all, Mel, can you screw up my name? I don't know if that's right. Probably screwed it up. He said, I want an early token for the solar roof. Do you want it?
That's pretty cool.
But the problem is, again, I think these are all non-transferable.
No, you can transfer that. You can.
What?
I promise you can transfer it.
You can't have mine.
John is going to hook you up.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, John, because I'm getting a new roof on very soon, it won't happen. They won't have these fast enough. So I thank you so very much. But give it to somebody else because I have to build this stupid structure out here.
How long is it going to be?
Breaking ground probably in a week.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of referrals, Laney9300 is my referral code. In case you were wondering.
You know, there hasn't been a referral program announced to go past the end of October, so we're kind of winding down.
That's okay. Lock in another referral, and I can get one of those sweet Tesla home charging things.
Oh, yeah. That'd be good, too.
Baller.
Robert 3177.
Laney9300.
David Furling. I think that's where he's from. He's up now, hour north of Toronto, and he was talking about the solar summer versus winter thing. And he was saying, okay, your situation, Mel, where you make a third the amount of energy in the winter that you do in the summer is a bit of a bummer. But let me show you my numbers, my friend, which is in the winter, he can go to zero. Because there's not much sun and there's some snow and it's a bit of a bummer.
His thing goes from, in June, 1,400 kilowatt hours. In December, to 9,700 watt hours. That's not even a kilowatt hour.
That's enough for a light bulb.
That's like one order of magnitude less than a kilowatt hour.
Stop with the magnitude orders.
There are certainly places where this is a problem. And if you wanted to live on solar all year in the Toronto, you'd have to save a lot of summer energy. Here's my idea. I thought, like, we could get you a battery, but it's going to have to be massive and it's too expensive. And where would you put it? So I've got this idea. It's going back in time. We've talked about this in the past. Here's what we're going to do.
Okay.
We're going to put your home on hydraulics.
Okay.
And in the summer, we're going to pump your home up. It's very heavy. We're going to push it up with all the excess solar energy. And then for the rest of the year, the house is going to slowly come down. It's going to spin a flywheel or something like that. And it's going to give you your energy. The problem is going to be that if the kids step out of the back door at the beginning or the end of summer when it's at its highest, you're never going to see me. Okay?
This reminds me of another.
Your plan is terrible, by the way.
Another movie that's on my media pick list, Up.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a bit like Up.
I love that movie, by the way.
John Main says this. Something about campers. Can somebody explain this to me?
Yeah, he wanted to know, will you be able to do camper mode in the Model 3? Because he saw the size of the trunk in that thing. And if you fold those back seats down, you could theoretically lay down there. My guess is in the Model S or in the new Model X with the fold flat center row of seats, you could lay them all flat, put a little mattress out there, and then have a sleep in your car, turning it into, Mel, a camper.
Yeah. So there's a lot of pictures of particularly one guy in the Model S who does this, and it looks like a luxurious big place to sleep.
Yeah.
The X with the fold-down seats would be luxurious. Model 3 could be luxurious. We'll see.
Well, but you'd have that thing, the back panel situation in your view.
Yeah, so the Model S is perfect for car camping. If you drop your seats, your back seats, push your front seats all the way forward, with a little ingenuity, a little MacGyvering, you can stick a double air mattress in the back, and a person who's over 6 feet tall can sleep comfortably. A friend of mine, Rob, has done that. He actually took a 60 all around the United States. His is one of the Tesla stories. If you go on the Tesla owners, you know, experience website, it's one of the early ones. And he, you know, MacGyvered a way to do it. And then recently, and I was going to probably put this on a show coming up, I've been in contact with a fellow named Chris Kolja. He's from like Eastern Europe area, and he's developed this clamshell Tesla mattress device that makes it like really idiot-proof, very easy and convenient to turn your Tesla into a camper. It's pretty sweet.
Zombie apocalypse vehicle.
Hey, Mel, it's idiot-proof. You should get one.
No! It's upsetting. The David Post says this. Look, you guys have been talking about heated seats and how that's more efficient in cold climates, and that's all fine. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you one thing that I'm concerned about.
Are we really going to talk about this?
He's worried about his jiggly bits.
What? No, can we not call him that? You're a doctor. Let's call him his reproductive organs.
His nether region bits.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's better.
That his testicles on the warm seats are going to be warmed up so much that he's going to reduce his spermatozoa production. Uh-huh. Then there'll be less Englishmen. And I say this is actually a positive thing. This has been Elon's plan the whole time.
It's not about
electrifying the world. It's about getting warm heats into enough cars that there'll be significantly less people in the years ahead.
So this is
the master plan.
This plays into my Elon is a supervillain plan because he's trying to castrate all of us with heated seats.
In 2002, I bought a Volkswagen Passat, the safest car of the year when my son was just a few years old. Mm-hmm. And guess what it had?
Heated seats.
Heated seats.
And guess what? You have not had another child.
It's true. Ladies and gentlemen,
it's not Elon doing this.
Oh. It's a worldwide conspiracy. It's been going for 100 years.
It's from, there was like the Freemasons. They got together in a big room and they said, you know what we're going to invent? Heated seats. That will control population. You people are ridiculous. I don't even know why we have these lines of questioning.
Sean McHugh said this, Mel, you are a bad person. So when you go to these new big Tesla supercharger stations and you have your big Tesla lounge, please do not put up stupid CNN or anything else. I don't want to see that.
He didn't specifically call out CNN. He said the news in general.
Yeah. The news in general. He just wants to see cool drone footage of Model 3s going up mountains and gigafactories and things that make him happy.
I would
inside.
Like to see the original Planet Earth series with David Attenborough or Richard Attenborough just on a loop.
Those are cool.
Is it David or Richard? I don't remember. It's one of them.
I think it's David.
It's not the Richard, Sigourney Weaver version.
Richard is a director. Okay. I think so. And so I was thinking this would be an awesome thing. Like you go to these Tesla massive supercharger places. They have their own building. And you could have an area in which you just put on a VR headset and you're on Mars. And you're looking around and you're on the surface of Mars. And so your kids could put on the VR headsets, which you get, you know, you put your Tesla key over to like a little locker thing. It unlocks it for you. They know who is taking the headset. You put on the headset and you walk around, or maybe it's just something you put your phone into and then it's disposable.
Walking around with Tesla. A VR headset on is a very bad idea.
In a safe place while your car is charging, you know? And I thought that would be fantastic. What a cool idea. Or some other, you know, Tesla cool, like, you know, innovation that is tech.
Just have like a sandwich and a chair?
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah.
Oh, you can have a VR headset. Paul Boyd has a picture of his Tesla, and it says, I was sick for a week, and my Tesla must be mad at me, but I don't understand what this picture shows.
It shows either that it has got some air coming out of its tire. That's the little thing at the very top. That's the indicator that your tire is low. Or the 287 something or others. I don't know.
Look at the energy pattern. There's a finger. He's getting the burn from his car.
So little gauge next to the Tesla at the little little waveform is the middle finger, which actually is super thematic to this show because Robert has dropped the F bomb. I don't even know how many times.
I will put this up at ROSENBL. That's my Twitter feed.
Now for
I'll put
sure
up there.
People are going to think he's the smart one.
Jason Holman is a concern. Oh now, God. He loves his 7-year-old, but his 7-year-old did a bad thing and opened the door when the car was driving. And it sort of destroyed the door.
He should not have parked his... I blame him. He parked his car in a garage.
Hmm.
What's wrong with that?
No, I don't blame him. I don't blame him. I'm just kidding.
So he wants to know, what's the latest with the bodywork on Tesla's taking forever to get fixed? And I say to you, Jason.
Paul Jason? Jason Paul?
Not Jason Paul. Oh, I say, we're going to find out how long this takes, because you're going to tell us in the next few weeks.
That's one less Patreon supporter we now have. Oh, sorry, Jason. I told him not to park his car in a garage, and you called him Paul.
No, well, it happens. Steve
Really?
Thane.
Steve Thane. That's not that difficult.
Just a thought.
Okay.
Would the surprise at the semi event be a Tesla RV or camper van, as we call it in the UK? And I say, I hope so. How cool would it be to have a fully electric RV, solar panels on the top? You're cruising around, you see in the United States, you see in the United Kingdoms. It would be so cool.
One of those
basically
big coaches.
Using the same kind of engines.
Yeah, but one of those big giant. Because those coaches, I don't know if you gentlemen have ever watched any of those America's Greatest RV shows. Those things can be $1 million. People spend a lot of money on those giant
bus coaches. Buttload. Of fuel.
They do.
But he's thinking
they have
that
Cummings engines in them, most of them, Mel. You may have heard of that.
Cummings.
Company.
Yes.
Yeah, we talked about Cummings. Mm-hmm. So he says that maybe that will be part of the, quote, extra from the Tesla truck semi reveal.
The one more thing, as it were.
He also notes that he was excited to see that the Telford supercharger looked like it was almost ready to be turned on. And in fact, it was one of the UK superchargers I just reported about.
Nice.
There you go. And he also says he has a Nissan Leaf, and despite our musings about the Leaf, he's driven his a lot, and the battery is holding up quite well.
Yeah.
So that's good. There was just the first generation Leaf problem with their batteries, and they seem to have improved it. Joe Lana says, these movies you've been talking about, Cowspiracy and What the Health, these movies that say eating meat is bad, 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 and it's global warming and it's bad and it's bad, and he's suggesting that that may not be true. These are very propaganda movies. These are by people who basically want you to be vegan for other reasons. And he says that it's not true that eating beef really makes greenhouse gases worse. But
I don't know.
I'm not an expert. I want to read more about it. But everybody that I've read said it is bad because they're taking carbon from one form, converting it to methane. That methane gets farted out by the cows, and that is far more damaging than just sort of carbon that's sequestered in leafy things.
Right. Well, the other part about it is that they're taking down a lot of rainforest in places like Brazil, which is sequestering a lot of carbon, a lot more carbons being sequestered in a tree. And they're clearing this rainforest a lot of times through burning of it. So there are a lot of different factors that go into it. I agree that those films are animal cruelty propaganda. You know what? If that's a reason why you don't eat meat, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with not wanting to be cruel to animals, in my opinion.
That's true. And this reminded me of a tweet that I saw from Jim Harris. There's a little infographic, maybe we'll be able to get this into the show notes, that shows the staggering amount of water that's used in producing protein. Cows, 2,500 gallons of protein for one, I'm sorry, 2,500 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of protein.
Right.
If you go to pigs, it's 800 gallons. Chickens, 567. But guess what has the least amount of water consumption to produce 1 pound of protein? Crickets.
Have you ever eaten a cricket?
I have.
Only by accident.
I have.
We did this on one of our other shows, and it was the same thing. It was during our water crisis here. And we got cricket protein bars, and we actually ate them.
How were they?
Like most protein bars, not that good.
But they're on par.
Yeah, they're on par with crappy protein bars.
I think we should do that next week.
And it would be difficult to replace all of the Earth's protein needs without animal protein. Difficult, but not impossible. There's a lot of protein.
Crickets are animal. Well,
for sure.
Insecta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the other thing that's not on here, which I'd be interested in, because we all sort of take these snippets of information, and so I think this means we need to be more globally educated. I know that almonds, for example, a lot of people eat almonds and they're vegetarians and it's almonds. Almonds are incredibly resource intense when it comes to water.
Absolutely.
In fact, they've sucked the middle of Southern California dry.
Yeah.
Almonds are bad too.
Yeah, the Central Valley is so committed to almonds because they make money, but they suck a ton of water. One concern from one of our ambassadors of Talking Tesla, Joel Sapp.
Yeah.
He also put in a tweet that he would miss the crunchiness of a fried chicken drumstick if it was made out of crickets.
So the one thing that to that you can take away from this is, as humans, we have an impact on our environment in one way or the other. So if we can, as much as possible, mitigate that, that would be ideal. And the problem is a lot of people in the first world have a much greater impact per capita than people not in the first world. And so if everybody lived like us, that would be problematic. So we have to bring ourselves back while other people get to bring themselves up. And that is sort of what the overriding flow of what we talk about here should be.
So maybe crickets for one dinner a week.
Sure. I mean, or one a month. I don't know. It doesn't have to be crickets.
Felipe Ferens says, look, there's these Aussies that are trying to drive all the way around Australia on electricity, and I need to spend some more time reading about this. Australia's a huge country.
Is it?
It's the same size as the continental US. 22-ish million people versus 350 million people. Infrastructure in some parts of that, hard. So I'm interested to see if they can actually pull this off.
Yeah. That'd be exciting.
Now, a lot of people, Ross Harrison and William Brown Vlogs and others, have noticed that Dyson, the people who make fans and vacuum cleaners are going to make electric vehicles. And there's a bunch of articles about this. So Mr. Dyson, I guess it is.
It is Sir James Dyson.
Sir James Dyson says, we're going to get into EVs. And it's so funny because I was walking yesterday through Costco going to get, I don't know, some almonds and some beef. And I walk past the Dyson fan people. I'm like, really? They're going to go from fans to electric vehicles?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can they do it?
He's got 400 people working on this, and they've been doing it secretly for the last 2 years in Malmesbury, Wiltshire.
And William Brown Vlogs, who says that Dyson, who makes vacuum cleaners, are going to make cars, and they're probably going to suck.
Oh! Bazinga.
Deboom. Max Hedron, I like to call him Max Headroom, says, how do you convince your wife that you should get a Model 3? And I say you do this. You say, look, we're going to save the planet here. You're never going to go to the gas station. It's going to be the nicest car in the world. Please get I have. Please.
It took
please,
everything I had please. To keep my wife from buying an X.
I know, you were the exact opposite. Yeah. The X came out. It's $100,000. And Tom's like, we're not buying this. And his wife's like, yes, we are. No, we're not. Yes, we are. So it goes both ways.
This is like another Tesla pro tip. I had to convince my wife when I wanted to buy a Tesla for myself, and this was a bone of contention. We had never bought a car this expensive. It was three times more than any car we'd ever bought.
Yeah.
So I went onto the Tesla forums, and I read compulsively, like I kind of still do. And all these wizened Tesla owners said, this is how you get your spouse on board. And I've said this before on the show, but it's worth repeating. You take them for a test drive.
Right, but let's not say wife, let's say spouse, because it does go both ways. Let's not make it a gender-based thing. There are lots of people on both sides. There's a lot of people who love big 4x4 trucks of both genders, and there's a lot of people who like cute little efficient electric cars on both genders and really expensive Italian sports cars in both genders.
So my only advice is when you take your spouse to go test drive a Tesla, make sure you let the person at the test drive, the Tesla person, say, please, can you switch it out of 100 P100D ludicrous mode? Because I just don't want to have to spend that much.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, don't do that.
I took, again, it's all about test driving. If you're really trying to convince somebody to buy an electric car, it's such a different experience. You really have to drive it. So I had my son's cross-country team. They did really well this weekend. Mm-hmm. And I drove them home in the S. And we're just sort of doing normal acceleration onto the freeway and stuff. And every one of them, to a man and a woman, were like, oh, my gosh, it's so smooth and it's so quiet. What's going on here? I'm like, the future.
The future. It's not the future, Mel. It's the present.
It's true. Ross Harrison says that, there's some interesting
wait,
stuff.
Wait, wait, wait. Can you go back? Can you say that again?
Ross Harrison.
Where's the second N? Or any N?
Harry.
Well, when Harrison. You put two R's
there
next to each other.
Oh, Ross Harrison.
You put two R's next to each other, they look like an M.
It's not there. He didn't say Ross Hammerson.
Ross says he's from the UK, and there's some interesting green stuff going on there. Like, their grid is getting greener and greener all the time. One of the things that stuck out to me in this article that he sent is that they try and predict a couple of days ahead what's going to happen with the windy winds and the solar. And so they send out a little tweet to you, a little message saying, hey, for the next 2 days, it's going to be really sunny. There's going to be a lot of excess energy. Why don't you do all those things that need electricity? Charge up your car, wash your clothes, do all that stuff, because the next couple of days after that, it's not going to be as much. So they're managing proactively energy usage, and I thought this is interesting. I don't know how extrapolatable it is, but it's pretty cool. Okay, all your electric car owners, going to be really sunny tomorrow. Charge them up tomorrow, and perhaps not charge them up on Wednesday.
I don't want my government telling me what I have to do.
Oh, my God.
You can elect to do it or not do it. I'm just saying that here in the UKs, they're doing fun things.
Here in the UKs? Here in the UKs.
Well, Ross is
in
the UK.
Why do we have to end this show like
Ross
with
is
just
in the UK.
Lunacy and craziness?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. I'm sorry for my inability to.
You shouldn't be sorry because honestly, it's one of my favorite parts of the entire show. Actually, I will tell you this. The reason that we do letters, as many as we do, is because I like to watch Mel's just face as he struggles to say people's names.
I have a disorder. We're looking into it. CAT scans have been done.
But it's only during this portion of the show. You can say all the other words.
I have a problem. I'm not a good reader. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Patreon's going to be so good. This Alex is going to be on Patreon. It's going to be so great.
Crush Tom's car. Crush Tom's car. Crush Tom's
Talking
car.
Talking Tesla is a production of Fully Boo Incorporated, hosted by Mel Herbert, Tom Wolfson, and Robert Rosenberg. Edited by Eliza Jane Barnes and produced by CC Herbert and Mel Herbert. To support Talking Tesla, go to patreon.com/talkingtesla. To find our referral codes, go to talkingtesla.net/about. And finally, if you love the show, go write us a review on iTunes.